This is episode number 39 with the founder and CEO of Scenthound, Tim Vogel. Welcome to the Path to Freedom podcast. I'm your host, Wes Barefoot, where it's my mission to help aspiring entrepreneurs and existing business owners take control of their lives and create freedom for themselves through business ownership. Each episode, I'll be exploring the strategies and tactics of other successful entrepreneurs that have created freedom in their own lives while sharing what I'm learning along my own path to freedom. I'm glad you're here. Let's drop in. Before we drop into the episode, a quick message from our sponsor, 919 Marketing. I've worked with 919 Marketing for years, and there's no one I trust more with my marketing needs in any of our businesses. I've worked with them in our franchise businesses, in my consulting business. I've worked with them on the franchisor side, and I love working with 919 because they take the time to listen. They take the time to understand what it is I'm looking to accomplish through my marketing, who I'm trying to reach, and then they help me put a plan together to do just that. I've worked with tons of marketing companies over the years, and too often it's a one-size-fits-all approach, but not with 919 Marketing. In addition to that, they've developed some amazing technology called 919 Insights, franchising's first and only AI-powered analytics platform. With 919 Insights in place, 919 Marketing can identify the exact topics that matter to your franchise candidates and provide the specific roadmap to help your brand become the highest ranking and most trusted resource when they're searching for answers. So if you're ready to start getting better results from your marketing, and if you want a free demo of 919 Insights, reach out to Graham Chapman at 919-459-8157 or send them an email at gchapman@919marketing.com to schedule your free demo today. So whether you're a franchisor, a franchisee, or just getting started in your first franchise business, make sure to check out 919 Marketing and tell them Wes Barefoot sent you. Now, let's drop into the episode. Very cool episode with a very inspiring guy teed up for you guys today. My guest, Tim Vogel, is the founder and CEO of Scenthound, which is a dog grooming company that's found a niche in simply providing the routine care and basic grooming that your dog needs. They don't go above and beyond. They don't try to get too fancy with what they do, and they found a huge market for this. And Tim shares his story in this episode of how he decided to leave a very successful career in corporate America with a very young child at the time and start this business, and then how he spent years and years continuing to experiment and try different things and dial the business in to the point where he felt comfortable then going to scale the business, and he decided to do that through franchising the business. So he also goes into some detail about, you know, how he got to the point of franchising, and also talks about the amazing franchise opportunity that he's created with Scenthound. And I've had the opportunity to, you know, really get to know Scenthound as a company a little bit. It's a fascinating company. In my opinion, it's a great franchise opportunity for someone that's, you know, the right fit for what they're looking for, which Tim also goes into some detail on in the episode here. And I'm very glad that I was able to connect with Tim and get him on the podcast to share his story. I think you'll get a ton of value from it and learn a lot, whether you're interested in franchising or simply interested in, you know, how to go about scaling a business the right way. So with that, let's go ahead and drop in with Tim Vogel. I've had a chance to learn a little bit about your brand over the last couple months. Love the concept. Scenthound is your company, and very excited to have you here to share your story of how you've built Scenthound to where it is today. And also want to hear, you know, a little bit about your vision and where you see the company going from here. So, you know, for those listening in that may not be familiar with you and Scenthound, maybe tell us a little bit about the business, and then I'd love to hear your story of how you got started in the first place.
Yeah, totally. So Scent Hound is really a wellness-focused, membership-based dog grooming business.
Okay.
And so kind of really simply stated, if you've got a dog, for $25, you can come in and we'll give them a bath, we'll clean their ears, we'll brush their teeth, we'll clip their nails, we'll get you in and out the door about 15 to 20 minutes.
Wow.
But for $45 a month, you can do that unlimited. And so that's the really basic value proposition that we've put together at Scent Hound.
So it's $25 like monthly membership, and that would be like one time to bring your dog in. And then for $45, you could bring them in as many times. Yeah, I need that because we have a boxer, and like within 2 days of him getting a bath, he stinks again. So
we actually designed this for your kind of dog in mind. So most
really
set up to be about haircuts.
Yeah.
And so boxer doesn't need a haircut.
No.
But all dogs need care and the basic things like teeth, nails, ears. And so we made it fast, easy, and affordable for boxers. So literally drop your dog off, go to the grocery store because we're in grocery store at anchor shopping centers.
Okay.
Do your business, pick your dog up, go home, done.
That's brilliant. I love it. We need to get one in Wilmington, North Carolina, and I'll be your first client.
Awesome. We're working on it.
Very cool. So how'd you get into this business in the first place?
You know, it's interesting. So once upon a time, got married, we had a kid, got married, and my wife said, let's get a dog. And so we really were on this path of like, let's get a plant. Did that live? Let's get a pet. Does that live? Then, sure. Then we can maybe have a kid, right? And my wife actually had to convince me to get a dog. I was like, you know, I'm not sure I want a dog. I'd rather travel and not have the responsibility. Long story short, she won.
Yeah, of course, they always do.
Yeah, we went and got this dog. And I was transitioning from one job to another, so I was able to take a month off. So that's when we decided to get this puppy. And so we got this puppy. I started geeking out about dogs, started researching, like, how do you raise a dog, all that stuff. And there was this one moment, this one book where it said, you know, they're hierarchy animals, they're pack animals. So the way to set yourself as the pack leader is take the puppy out somewhere open, set them down, and then walk away from them. Mm. And that dog will realize that you're the leader, and then it'll follow you.
Interesting.
So I went out to the woods. We were living in the DC area at the time. So I was in Maryland, put the puppy down in the woods on this trail. And I started walking away and I looked back and he's right on my heel. And it was just like this moment. There was like this bond. I was like, this is the coolest thing ever.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's kind of where my love for dogs started to happen. And then I was with a company in DC, long commute. We were going through a merger and I started looking at businesses and I was like, you know, what could I do that I would be passionate about?
Mm-hmm.
And I started looking at different industries and the pet industry was huge.
Yeah.
And I started realizing a lot of my skills were transferable to kind of some of the industry stuff there.
Mm-hmm.
And so we made the big leap to make a quality of life change. We had a son at that point, 18 month old.
Okay.
So we were looking at a quality of life change and we decided to start a business and move to a new area. So we moved to Southern Florida just for quality of life change, a town called Jupiter, which we're still here and we love it. My kid's now in high school. So that was a while ago. And launched a mobile pet grooming business. And that's kind of where it all started.
So this is 16-ish years ago that
exactly
you started
right.
the business.
Exactly right. And I had these grand visions. So I, you know, my history is kind of operations type person. And so
VP
of ops for different kinds of companies.
Sure.
And so I had this vision of like starting a mobile grooming business and then scaling it some way, either for franchising or something else. And then I started this business and I really quickly realized I didn't know what the heck I was doing. I didn't realize all the problems that there were, the barriers to scalability. Mm. I didn't know a lot of the intricacies of the industry. So I really set on the path of like trying to solve for scalability. And so when you look at this career path, this 15 years, it started at mobile. I transitioned to retail, really at pet grooming salons that solved a bunch of problems that I couldn't solve in mobile.
Okay.
And then it was really like 10 years in of really deliberately running experiments and testing this thing where I had this big aha moment. And there was an aha moment actually where I was walking my dog in our neighborhood and a new neighbor had just moved in and he was out walking his lab. And so we just got to chatting, introduced ourselves. He asked what I did and I was like, you know, I own a dog grooming business. And he's like, oh, that's cool. My dog doesn't need grooming. And then it really dawned on me. I was like, oh my God, your dog. And I looked at his dog. His dog had his knuckles were actually disfigured because he had never cut the nails.
Oh, wow.
I could smell his dog's ear infection. I was like, this is a good guy. He just doesn't know. And
yeah,
so I was like,
yeah.
Wait a minute. There's not someone for like you, the boxer dad out there, to get fast, easy, and affordable care. You got to go to this groomer where you leave him for the day. It's all about the haircuts and the styling. And so that's really when there was a big aha moment, a big pivot. And we started testing, like, how do we serve that crowd? And when we started doing the research on it, I realized, and actually in 2020, the top 10 breeds owned in the US, one of them needs a haircut.
Really?
So 9 of those dogs don't need haircuts.
Wow.
And so when you start looking at the marketplace, we're like, wait a minute. Grooming is only focusing on a small sliver of dogs. Yeah. But all dogs need care. Why don't we focus on the other part of it? And so
smart.
So that was really what we call our Blue Ocean strategy. And so we made it fast and easy and affordable for those dog parents. And then we did do haircuts, but very mm-hmm. simple and limited so that we do all dogs.
Sure.
And ever since we started working on that model and we put a bunch of other pieces into it, it really took off. And that's really what started that journey into kind of this, what we call Scent Hound today.
Yeah, it's fascinating. So it sounds like when you started it, based on your background, you know, doing operations, you kind of had some vision for, you know, hey, how do we scale this thing? I mean, it doesn't sound like you started out thinking, hey, I'm just going to have one single, you know, pet grooming location. But then you quickly realized, hey, before we start focusing on scaling, there's a lot we need to figure out and kind of dial in from an operational standpoint.
Absolutely.
How long did it take you to make the transition from it being a mobile business to, you know, more of a retail business?
Yeah, so it wasn't until, so started mobile in 2005. We built that up to 4 vans, running 7 days a week. It was a good lifestyle business. That was never my ambition. I always wanted to do something greater. 2010, it was 5 years later that I finally kind of looked at all the options, you know, start a grooming school, try to do grooming that way, scale mobile that way, where I ultimately decided to go the retail route and actually do the training in-house. And so that was another big aha, was the biggest barrier to our growth was the technicians, the stylists. And everyone's fighting over stylists because there's just not enough of them. And so my big aha was the only way I'm going to scale this is to get rid of the stylist. And that's a little counterintuitive. Like, how do you grow a grooming business? Get rid of the groomer.
Right.
And so what we started by doing is training groomers ourselves. And so we actually put an entire curriculum in place where we hired for attitude, trained for skills, brought someone in as a bather, and then worked them up through the groomer process. And that was the first big innovation. And then as we started to scale that, we found that it still took us a year to make a groomer. And so that's when the Scent Hound model came in. I can now make a trimmer within our model in under a month now.
Oh,
and
wow.
Because we've really limited the types of haircuts. We don't do breed standard haircuts. We just kind of do one length all over. And that's another big innovation in our business.
Yeah. So you've really simplified, you know, kind of the product offering, or I guess the service offering, which makes it a lot easier for you to find the talent that you need. And I love what you said about, you know, you hire based on attitude and then train them what they're going to need to know for their role. Because I mean, in our businesses, we own a couple of franchise businesses, and we've learned that the hard way over the years that, you know, so that's our strategy now. It's like we always hire for attitude and personality because you can't train that. And then we train them for what they need to do in whatever role we're bringing them on for. So I think that's a really wise decision that you guys have made. And now that you're franchising, I'm sure that helps your franchisees in such a huge way, because I don't care what the business is. If it's you know, any sort of a scalable business, the hardest thing that most business owners have is finding the right people, getting them trained, and then retaining them. So sounds like you guys are really in a good spot to help your franchisees do that a lot more efficiently.
Yeah. So when I look at the business and what I've been doing over the last 15 years is solving for scalability. And so what scalability means to me is simple, easy, and repeatable. And so, you know, it's another way to look at it is kind of finding the simplicity on the other side of complexity. And so grooming is a really complex problem and no one's really solved it. You know, even the big boys have big grooming schools, the Petcos, the PetSmarts, they don't have that simple model in place. And so we were really trying to find a way, like, how do you scale this thing? How do you get it so that it's easy and repeatable without a, you know, all these complexities? So even the pricing is another big innovation for us, where it's $25. Like, if you've got a Chihuahua or a Great Pyrenees, it's $25.
Wow.
If you call any grooming place, it's like, well, what kind of breed do you have? Mm-hmm. How long have you had them? How old are they? When's the last time they got a haircut? And then they make up a price.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's hard to market and that's hard to scale. So our entire marketing process is $25. So, you know, get you in to try us out and then convert you to a member. And so we'll do $15 for your first try. Mm. And I can mark $15 all day long. I can get people in. And then all I do is work on my conversion ratio to get them to become a member. And so that's much simpler and much more scalable.
Well, and it's super affordable, right? I mean, very few, like if you have a dog, you know, you've hopefully thought through what it's going to cost you to have a dog. And so like $25 a month, that's, you know, that's nothing to keep them well-groomed and, you know, their nails trimmed and smelling good. That's, I think that's brilliant, is that you found a way to make it so affordable.
That's another part just to talk about really quick, which is the price. And so there's all these different kinds of dogs out there. 9 of the top 10 owned don't need a haircut, but some do, right? And so what we really set out to do is say, how can we set this up so that you only pay for what you need? Mm. You know, everyone else has kind of this one size fits all. So our $25 gets you the bath, ears, nails, teeth, but we don't blow dry your dog. So if you've got a boxer, I'm going to towel dry him. That's good enough. Your dog can be dry in 5 minutes anyhow. You don't care about that, right? You care about the stuff that you don't want to do, which is wash them, brush their teeth, clean their ears, clip their nails. But if you want to add on a brush out and a blow dry, then you can do that. And depending on what size dog you have, then you can add that on as an additional one, which you pay just for that. So if you got a golden retriever, maybe I do want to brush out and a blow dry, get some of that undercoat out.
Sure.
But if I want to add on a haircut, then I can add on the brush out and the blow dry and the haircut. So it's kind of choose your own adventure, essentially, with us.
Yeah, I like that.
And now it's personalized. You only pay for what you need, which just makes it better, a better solution for the customer.
Yeah, brilliant. So I'm curious. So you open this location in Jupiter, Florida. You start out mobile, then you decide to transition to a retail location. Now you're franchising, but before you came to the conclusion that you wanted to franchise the business, did you open other locations yourself?
Yeah. So I opened Jupiter. We started making groomers because we were still a grooming salon. Then we opened our West Palm Beach one and we started making groomers in that. And that's really where I still didn't think it was scalable because it took us so long to train groomers. And I'd spend a year making a groomer and then they'd be like, hey, I'm moving out of town. I'm getting married, you know, some life events. And so it was still hard for me to scale that. That's right around the time that I had that aha moment. And so then we opened our Boynton Beach location, which was number 3.
Okay.
We did no haircuts. So that was the next experiment. Mm. How can we just make this about those 90% of dogs or 80, 90% of dogs that are out there that don't need haircuts? Mm-hmm. And we started experimenting with that. And then we found that people didn't really understand it. So if you've got a boxer, you might not think about grooming. So we started to add grooming back in. And this was another huge pivot point for us, where I said, okay, let's add grooming in, but let's only do one haircut. It's one length all over. You choose the length, but it's only clipper work and it's super simplified. We were really successful there. And so the risk was going back to my other two locations, which were very successful businesses, and telling all of those customers, we're no longer doing specialty haircuts.
Right.
And that took a big leap of faith. And it took me a while to get the courage up to do that. But once we did that, what we found was really fascinating. We did lose about 5% of our business. But the 5% we lost was the 5% I didn't want. It was Mrs. Smith fighting with us about the Fluffy's top knot not being perfect, or this dog not looking like the picture in the magazine, right?
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And that's not scalable. That's artistry. And I think stylists out there do a wonderful job. There are a lot of artists out there. And so when Mrs. Smith comes with Fluffy, we're like, that's just not what we do. There's an amazing stylist half a mile down the road. They're going to take great care of you. And they're really going to do an artistic job on your dog and make him look beautiful.
Yeah.
But that's not us.
Well, credit to you for making that decision, because I'm sure it was a hard, scary decision to make. And I think in too many instances, business owners are afraid to essentially fire clients or make decisions that they know will lead to them. But if you have the understanding of your business, hey, this is roughly 5% of our client base. They're not, you know, really the clients that we're going after anyways. They probably weren't very profitable for you because of, you know, all the extra time that went into it. I mean, in our businesses, and you know, you have to get to a point where you can afford to quote unquote fire a client, but you know, we've gotten a lot better at it over the years, because there's definitely those clients out there that no matter what you do, no matter how much you bend over backwards, they're never going to be happy. And at the end of the day, you end up losing time and money on them. So credit to you for being willing to make those hard decisions. And it's cool to see now, you know, how it's worked out beneficially for you. Yeah. So at what point did you say, all right, I think we've got this dialed in to the point where we can start scaling? And then how did you come to the conclusion that franchising was the right way to go about that?
Yeah, so the membership model was still a test, right? And so we've definitely approached this business with kind of the scientific method in mind. You know, hold all your variables consistent except for one, do it at a location, see how that goes, compare the results to other things. And so that took some time. So Boynton was the experiment. We modified that. So then we opened the next one, which is our Wellington location, which kind of embodied all of the stuff we learned from Boynton. So the layout of the center is significantly different. The equipment we're using, the tools we're using, the process we put customers through had all of this learning in it. And Wellington's really kind of the first model, which is the franchise model.
Okay.
But with that being said, then we had four locations. By the way, I still have my mobile fleet. They still run 7 days a week. So that's, that's still off to the side. So we've been doing that for 15 years. It's a great business. But then what I did is our centers is I started testing the membership. So I did a different kind of membership in Boynton. I did a different kind of membership in Wellington because I really wanted to say which one's the stickiest, which one serves the customer best. And we did a bunch of things. And we honestly always had the vision of scale, right? Mm-hmm. And so when you look at this 15-year history and you say they started here and they ended here, it's really unimpressive, right? You know, like they didn't build a whole lot.
Yeah.
That really wasn't the moral of the story. The moral of the story was getting it absolutely right because scaling a small problem makes it a big problem. And
great
so
point.
I didn't want to do that. And actually someone had to tell me, Tim, it's good enough. Like 15 years, it's good enough time to go. Cause I'm the tinker. I'm like, it's gotta get just right. And so we finally had a winning experiment out of all of our different communications and our different memberships that we then moved everyone to the same thing. And that really didn't happen until 2018 into 2019. Did we start to really move everyone to the same platform? And that's when I then said, okay, I think this is ready to franchise because we've tested that model and really proven it out. And honestly, when we have franchisees come into our discovery process, that's what they're buying. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like I had an idea and I franchised it. I had an idea and I evolved. I learned deeply about the industry and then I evolved again and then I tested and then I evolved. And so I've literally screwed up everything there is to screw up so they don't have to. I've literally bumped into every corner so that they can avoid bumping into those corners. And it's funny as we watch franchisees go through the system now, they're like, have you thought of this? I was like, yes, and I actually tested it. And oh yeah, I've actually done that. And no, we've did that. And this is why we did that. Like I haven't answered, like not, there's not been one person that's come to me and said, hey, here's a new idea. And I was like, yeah, I've tested that. Because 15 years is a lot of time to test.
No doubt. And that is such a good point. You know, that's worth, I think, spending another minute or two on, right? Because a lot of cases when companies franchise, you know, if you really learn the story behind it, they were in business for 6 months, 9 months, 12 months, and then they're trying to run too fast, right? And, you know, I have a consulting business. I help people find franchise businesses that are going to help them accomplish what they want to do. I help them, you know, through the investigative process. So I see a lot of franchise companies out there and a lot of emerging franchise brands. And one thing I always want to really learn is what's the story? You know, how did the founders get the business started? So to your point, spending 15 years just tweaking it and testing it and taking what sounds like a very methodical approach to trying different things, figuring out what works, and then waiting until you were ready to scale it. Because the point you made earlier where, you know, a small problem at scale becomes a big problem is a really, really valid point. And it's interesting because I literally, before we got on, just recorded a podcast. I do a solo episode every Friday that just kind of talks about how to go about investigating a franchise. And I was talking about, you know, why would someone spend the money to invest in a franchise business? Why would you pay this, you know, fee up front? Why would you pay the ongoing fees? And one of the points I made was you're essentially paying to avoid the mistakes that the franchisor has already made. And in your case, that's 15 years of mistakes, right? So that's invaluable, 100%.
Yeah. Worth the investment 10 times over.
No doubt. It really is, because now your franchisees coming in, they can hit the ground running. They don't have to spend all this time trial and errors and you know, trying different things. Because like you said, they can come to you and say, hey, have you tried this? You'd be like, yep, it didn't work. Here's why. And this is why we do it this way. So their ramp up is, or at least they're in a position to ramp up so much quicker than they would have been if they were trying to do it on their own or if you hadn't spent so much time testing. Well,
and there's another big part to that, which is spending the time understanding who you are, the why behind your company. Mm. And and I think a lot of companies may feel it, but can't articulate it well. And there's a lot of companies that just have no idea what their why is, why they exist, right?
Yeah.
And so 15 years of really the self-discovery process of who are you? Why do you exist? What is your value system? And getting really crystal clear around that creates tremendous alignment, which then can create tremendous momentum in your business. And so our why is we remove barriers so people can love and connect with their dogs every single day. And what that really means is we're helping people practice love at home. And the way you practice love, you've got the boxer. When you come home from work or you hang out at home and you're with your dog, you can pause, you can connect. It makes you a little bit more human. The science actually backs it. Your blood pressure is lower. You actually live longer if you have a dog. You're healthier if you have a dog.
Yeah, I've seen some of that. It's a good point, and I love your why and love the fact that you can articulate it so clearly. And you know, that it's something you've clearly spent a lot of time figuring out, because to your point, a lot of companies haven't, or you know, even if they have, or they have a why that they, you know, can communicate, they don't necessarily, you know, live it within their culture. And that's always something I'm advising people to really get a good sense of as they're investigating franchise businesses, is get a feel for the culture, right? Because that can make you or break you as a franchisee if the franchisor doesn't have a strong culture, or if that culture simply doesn't align with a culture that you would be a good fit for. It can either be incredibly beneficial or it can be detrimental.
Well, yeah. And I say every company has a culture, just some companies don't know what it is.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so you want to be very deliberate about what your culture is, and you want to have things in place that actually further enhance and encourage that culture throughout the entire system. And if that happens, that alignment happens, meaning we're all on the same mission, doing the same thing because we care about the same stuff.
Yeah, everyone's moving in the same direction for the same reasons. So I'm curious, you know, once you finally got to the point where you said, all right, you know, this thing's dialed in enough, we're ready to start scaling it, did you go back and forth about some different ways to do that? Or did you kind of know that franchising was the route you wanted to take?
No, you know, from the very beginning, I thought franchising was an interesting funding strategy and scaling strategy, right? Yep. And so, but I had to take a good hard look at that, and I had to really educate myself on an entirely new business, because I just didn't know anything about franchising. And so there was a year, really 2018, where I spent a significant amount of time researching, learning, and getting into the franchise world to see if that's the direction I wanted to go. And that was a really cool process, and it was a lot of fun, because, you know, I'd spent all this time kind of thinking about my business and my industry, and then it was like a whole new business again. It was a big pivot.
Yeah, it is.
And so, yeah, there was a lot to learn there.
Yeah. Well, and so that's interesting, because, you know, again, me looking at franchise companies so often, and when there is a newer concept that I'm familiarizing myself with, you know, I like your story, right? You spent so much time dialing the model in before you said, okay, let's go out and franchise it. But, you know, I also like hearing that you took the time to really dive in and learn franchising, because I've seen that too, where, because to your point, it is a big transition, right? I mean, what a lot of companies don't understand when they make that transition from being an independent standalone company to a franchisor is, you know, your role changes, right? In one regard, you're no longer in the grooming business. You're in the franchisee support business.
Yeah.
Right. And a lot of people don't wrap their head around that when they go to start franchising. And then, you know, a year into it, they're like, dang, I don't even like supporting franchisees, you know? And then you have this weird dynamic where when it should be, you know, total alignment, a partnership, franchisor supporting the franchisees, helping them in any way they possibly can, there's almost resentment, you know, from the franchisor to the franchisee. And then obviously over time, vice versa, the franchisees start to resent the franchisor. So love hearing that you, you know, really took the time to figure a lot of this out before you
Just to share a little bit of the soul searching around that, it ultimately came down to two things for me that I decided to do franchising. First is this: help people practice love and kind of make the world a slightly better place in our own way. That was kind of the amplification of our business was one reason. I wanted to amplify kind of what we were doing. The second part of it is I've been very involved in the EO community. That's Entrepreneurs Organization.
Yep, and, I'm familiar.
And I've been a coach through the Accelerator for years.
Very cool.
And so I really fell in love with entrepreneurialism and coaching entrepreneurialism.
Yeah.
So when I really looked at franchising, it married those two passions for me. I could scale and amplify the impact of our business, the positive things we're doing in the world. And I actually got to help people go on that entrepreneurial journey.
Yeah.
And if I didn't have that passion, I probably wouldn't have franchised, because that is exactly what we're doing, is we're taking people who want to make the entrepreneurial leap in a de-risked way. They want to do it in a safe way. And so having been on that entrepreneurial journey myself, having seen hundreds of businesses and coaching them on an entrepreneurial journey, what could be more cool than taking people on the entrepreneurial journey in a business I built?
Yeah.
And like, so it was just a home run for me to be able to be in this business, to help watch people bring love into people's homes on the entrepreneurial journey. So I am like in the happiest place I could possibly be with this business.
And that's so cool to hear, because I think, you know, to be a franchisor, you have to have that passion for helping other people start their own entrepreneurial journey and coaching them through it, because yeah, there's a lot to learn even with a franchise. I mean, there's especially for first time business owners, and there's a lot, you know, a lot of it's around mindset, you know, overcoming fear, uncertainty and doubt. So yeah, I think it sounds like it's a perfect kind of combination for you. And I'm excited to, you know, see what you guys are able to do. Wes here. You may have noticed there's a franchising theme to this podcast, and that's because franchising's had a massive impact on my life. And it's the very reason I'm walking my own path to freedom. In fact, one of my companies is a franchise consulting company where I work with people to help them understand franchising and determine if it might be a good fit for them. And if it is something they want to explore, then I help them navigate the entire investigative process and ultimately find a franchise business that's a great match for them. You know, the fact of the matter is there are thousands and thousands of franchise businesses out there today. And like anything, there are good ones and there are bad ones. Even out of the many, many great franchise companies, not every one of them would necessarily be a good fit for you. You know, buying a franchise is a huge decision and you don't want to wing it. I've helped many people buy franchise businesses over the years, and my wife and I have bought and owned franchises today, and we plan to keep investing in franchise businesses. I love helping people understand this process and help them find a business that's going to be a great fit for them and help them accomplish their goals and ultimately create that freedom in their life that we're all looking for. The best part of all of this is that my services are free to the people I work with. And while I do love to contribute to charities and other great causes, I'm not a nonprofit. I'm compensated by the franchise companies I work with when I introduce them to someone that ends up becoming one of their franchisees. It's very similar to real estate, but with franchises. I have the privilege of working with hundreds and hundreds of the best franchise companies out there across practically every industry. So I can be absolutely confident that when I recommend someone to look at a franchise company, I'm introducing them to a very credible and proven company with a solid business model and great support. So if you think you might be interested in learning more about franchising and seeing if it might be right for you, I'd love to speak with you. Get in touch with me by email at Wes@path2freedom.com, path2frdm.com. And also check out my website at path2freedom.com, spelled the same way, where I've got a ton of resources, both franchise and non-franchise related, that will help you start down your own path to freedom. And of course, subscribe to and follow the podcast for more great advice about business ownership. And if you know anyone else that might be interested in speaking with me, please share this podcast with them. Thanks for listening to my shameless plug. Now let's drop back into the episode. Tell us a little bit, when did you officially launch the Scent Hound franchise model?
Yeah, so in general terms, kind of 2018, really going out and researching. And I would say anyone who's thinking about franchising, there's tremendous resources out there. So joining the IFA, you know, going to the Springboard events.
Yeah.
I'm here in Palm Beach County, which is, you know, right next to West Palm. So
yep.
Palm Beach Atlantic has a franchising discipline there. So
Okay. Connecting
with the Dean John Hayes down there.
Yeah.
Even other franchisors like Ray Titus has been super friendly with his time at United Franchise Group, even Orange Theory. And believe it or not, in EO, I'm in a national forum. There's 8 of us, I think maybe 9 of us now. we're all CEOs of franchise companies, and we meet once a quarter and share information. So,
yeah,
you know, just spending that time and really kind of getting yourself. So that was the first thing, is really just kind of going on that journey. So 2018 was really a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
2019 was starting to figure out the infrastructure. And so we hired our first franchise person. He was an operations guy. Kieran Scott, he came from Mosquito Joe. Before that, he was with Subway.
Yeah.
He's been with us 2 years now. He's awesome. But just like, how do we build the FDD, getting the resources for that? You know, what does the sales process and pipeline look like? How are we going to support the franchisees? And so 2019, really building all of that stuff and then starting to sell. Okay. So at the end of 2019, probably the last quarter, we sold three, our first three, which was really pretty exciting.
Yeah, definitely.
And then 2020, we really started selling. So we've sold another 27. So we sold 30 in the last 15 months.
Awesome.
And we've just opened our first three in the last month. And then we've got five more opening in the next 30 to 45 days. And we've probably got 15 to 20 on the finish line. We'll probably close in the next 30 days. So we've got a lot of exciting stuff happening.
Yeah, man. Super exciting. You guys are in a very exciting phase, because a lot of times getting those first couple of franchisees, because they've really got to be early adopters, right? I mean, they're taking a little bit more of a leap of faith than, you know, a franchisee that'll come in 4 years from now and have a lot more data of other franchisees and a bunch of franchisees that they can talk to and validate with. So, you guys are rocking and rolling.
Yeah. So we call that first batch, we really had the mindset of, we're looking for treasure hunters. So people that are going to find the diamond in the rough, which was us.
Yeah.
Before we've proven it. And they're like, okay, pet industry, things are happening there. They've got the history. I think they're going somewhere and they're willing to take a risk on us. And I couldn't be more grateful to our founding franchisors. And we have a founding group of five that we meet quarterly with, just us.
Very cool.
I couldn't be more grateful for them taking that leap of faith.
Yeah, and they'll go on to become leaders. I mean, it sounds like they already are, but they'll go on to, you know, become leaders within the organization. Other franchisees will look up to them. So I think having that kind of core group of founding franchisees is so key, because that's where some new franchisors mess up. You know, they're willing to sell a franchise to anyone that would be willing to write them a check, and then those franchisees don't do very well. And then it makes it very, very hard to continue bringing in franchisees if your first couple of franchisees are not successful and not happy.
Our other saying is, our first 10 are going to sell our next 100. And so we had to get
that right. I like that. That's well put. Well, I want to circle back to something you mentioned earlier, just talking about, you know, IFA and getting involved with other franchisors that had more experience than you. And I know some people in EO, I'm not in it personally, but I know some people in EO that are involved in franchising. And one of my mentors in franchising, he was the CEO of the first franchisor that I worked for. He's been in a peer group for 8 or 9 years now with, there's 6 or 7 other CEOs of franchise companies. They were all in similar spots when they started this group. Some of them are still leading those companies. Some of them have gone on to do other things, but he would tell you that being a part of that group and just, you know, everything he learned from other CEOs going through the same type of struggles and challenges that he was, you know, he would give so much credit to that. And I think it's a testament to franchising in general. I mean, I talk about this pretty often on the podcast, but once you get into franchising, it's kind of a small world, and it never ceases to amaze me though, how willing people are to share and just, you know, help other people learn. Even if you're potentially talking to, you know, what could be considered a competitor of yours. Like I've never had anyone involved in franchising not be willing to share or to help me out. So I just think it's 100%. Such a cool, you know, way of doing business. And once you get immersed in it, like, you don't see people leaving franchising to go do something else. Like, once you're in, you're kind of in for life.
Yeah, totally. So there's a couple thoughts I have around that. First of all, I think as the CEO goes, so goes the company.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've really found that my personal development is the only thing that helps the company develop. And so, you know, that growth mindset is critical to the company growing. And being in a peer group of learning in a safe place to be dumb, like, just to say, I don't understand, or I don't get it, or like, I did this, I'm lost. And like, being able to kind of be vulnerable and like learn in that kind of environment, is immeasurable, because that development of yourself is critical to the growth of your company.
Yeah, totally agree. And love hearing that, you know, you at the top of the company are still focused on, you know, growing yourself personally, and then understand how that's going to impact the rest of the company going forward. So, you know, on that note, tell me a little bit more about, you know, who you're looking for, you know, to be a Scent Hound franchisee. I mean, it sounds like you figured out very early on that you're not just going to sell a franchise to anyone. You want to make sure they're a good fit for the business. So what does that look like in your eyes and for Scent Hound?
Yeah. So one of the pillars to our scalability is this career path we have for employees. So we bring employees mostly in as what we call scent techs, and then we train them up through trimmer or reception, and they can actually get up through management. And so with that kind of career path growth model, ultimately at a year within the business, you're going to have too many trimmers and you're going to have people that are trained for managers. And so a multi-unit strategy is really the best fit for our model. Okay. So we're looking for someone that's kind of three plus, and we kind of have three avatar buckets. So it's 3, 5, or 8 plus. And so what we're really looking for is that someone that's got obviously the financial wherewithal to kind of go multi-unit, but also has the operational experience or is partnered with someone who has the operational experience to be able to run a multi-unit strategy, because this just leads itself or lends itself to a multi-unit strategy. And that's really the direction we're going. Now, we've done only a couple individuals. We have done a couple individuals, but almost exclusively, we're looking for multi-unit franchisees.
So are you, do you have any franchisees that have experience owning other franchise brands and saw a good opportunity in Scent Hound?
Yeah. So everyone we currently have is multi-unit, are new multi-unit, but strong operators. We are starting to get a lot of attention from people who are coming from other brands to say, hey, this is a niche that could fill in our portfolio.
Yeah.
And quite honestly, you know, the way our model works is it's combined errands, right? So you got this laundry, this dog parent's got a laundry list of things to do. The dog's typically at the bottom. So if I could combine it with my grocery shopping or my gym visit or getting the coffee. And so we're in premier locations that are errand intensive or grocery store anchored. Makes sense. You think of like the fitness concepts or, you know, those are the places that are starting to look at us to say, you know, actually, if I put a Scent Hound here, it's actually going to help every one of my other concepts because there's synergy between them.
Yeah, well, no doubt. And there's also a lot of multi-unit franchisees that are, you know, really looking closely at how they can diversify now, you know, after COVID and, you know, especially some of the fitness franchisees, they were shut down. Some of them are still shut down. So they're really looking at not necessarily getting out of those businesses entirely, but how can I diversify a bit so that, and I think that could be a really good strategy for you guys because, you know, whether it's pet grooming or fitness or whatever, I mean, a strong multi-unit operator, that skill set and experience is going to translate pretty well, I would think. So I love the story, man. Where do you see Scent Hound going from here? I mean, what's kind of your vision for the future?
So the kind of stage one of this is really scale. So let's get scale going because it's really about member acquisition. And so our goal by the end of 2023 is to actually have 250 of these open, which is a very, very ambitious goal. But this last year, 2020, what I've been spending most of my time on is building an exceptional leadership team to be able to execute on that. And so we've brought in, you know, CFO, COO, VP of Fran Dev, VP of Marketing, VP of Operations, Chief Veterinarian, CTO, all of these roles to then now put us in a position so that we can manage, so we can build the infrastructure to manage the throughput that's required to scale at that rate.
Which and is great to hear. Because as I'm sure you've seen, you know, it doesn't always happen that way. Franchise companies grow too fast all the time. And, you know, so I love seeing that you're, you know, putting the infrastructure, you know, bringing in talented people with experience, putting them in the right positions so that, you know, as you continue to scale, your existing franchisees don't suffer and see a lack of support because. Yeah,
so really strategy front for us, you know, we could look at, and I think what you're speaking to is most franchisors, and I would say most, but some franchisors wait until the last minute to make that hire. And it's really around using capital and effectively and all that stuff. But we actually chose to do a different strategy, which was build it before we need it so that it's ready to go.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit riskier because it's a little more capital intensive, but at the same time, that's bearing out for us. So we, you know, we've got an entire operations team in place. We've got corporate trainers, we've got franchise success managers, we've got opening specialists. So we've got these roles in place now so that as these franchises come through, that infrastructure is there and we can now. So remember, my mind's always about scalability. So everything we're building is about scalability, and that hasn't stopped all the way from the beginning. It's about scalability.
I love it, man. I love hearing that you're putting all the pieces in place to grow, not trying to catch up to the growth by coming in behind and putting the pieces in place. So, you know, if you've got a couple more minutes, man, I'd love to, you know, pick your brain a little bit, just because a lot of my audience is, you know, aspiring entrepreneurs, right? They know they want to go out and build something for themselves, you know, whether they've been in corporate America for their entire career or whatever the case may be. But I'm sure you've dealt with it. I know I've dealt with it. Anyone listening that has that drive to be a business owner deals with it. And that's, you know, mindset, right? What I call FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. So I'd love to, you know, hear a little bit of your thoughts based on your own experience and any advice you might share with an aspiring entrepreneur out there, how to get past the FUD, whether they're looking at a franchise business or something entirely outside of franchising. Because, I mean, I think you said earlier, you had an 18-month-old when you decided to go and start.
Huge risk.
Yeah, no doubt.
Huge risk. So, and how I convinced my wife to do it, unbelievable. That she, I look back, I was like, how did I do that? I mean, I must be really good at sales, right?
Credit, and credit to her for, you know, having faith in you to go do your thing. So, I mean, what advice would you give to someone else out there that's struggling with you know, taking those first initial steps into business ownership?
Yeah, I think there's two parts to it. And I think it was probably an EO someone told me once, and it really stuck with me. If you're going to bet on someone, bet on yourself. And for forever, I was always waiting for someone to tell me how it should work and tell me what I should do. And it finally dawned on me, and this is part of that self-discovery process, is like, look, no one else cares about it as much as I do, right? True. And I can develop these skills. So if I'm going to bet on someone, I'm going to bet on myself. So that was a big mindset shift for me. It's like, it's up to me. And if I fail, it's me. And if I succeed, it's me. And then the other part is be very diligent about protecting your mindset. And so what is your process for protecting your mindset? And so every day I get up and I protect my mindset. And so I have a process of things that get me in the right mindset every single day. And I found that super effective throughout my day. If I don't start my day right, it doesn't go right. If I don't go to bed thinking the right things, I don't wake up thinking the right things, right? And so
true.
The hook I have, or the mantra I have, is protect the mindset. And it's all about, you know, believing in myself, believing in the possibility, feeling good about what we're doing, and just connecting to that vision, that mission, my why, which is if you don't have the why, you don't have the juice to get up every single day. And that why is making the world a little bit better place by helping people practice love every day. If you don't have that, like if you don't care at that level about what you're doing, you're not going to have the juice, and don't do it because you're going to burn out and you're not going to be happy.
Such a good point. I love the mindset piece. I mean, so, cause I've learned the same thing, right? I mean, when I kind of first figured out how to take better control of my mindset, and it's something I'm always working on, right? Because I think your mind is a muscle. Yeah. You've got to work it out, just like, you know, physically you need to work out to stay in good shape or to get stronger. So, I mean, when I first launched this podcast, I did a series every Monday called Mindset Monday, because I just think it's so true. Yeah. If you're going to go down this entrepreneurial path, you got to get your head right. And to your point, you got to be doing it for the right reasons. You got to know what your driving reason is, because otherwise the tough days are just going to, you know, put your flame out and you're going to throw in the towel. So, and I don't want to get too far ahead, because, you know, we've got a lightning round that I like to ask about kind of morning routines, how people prime themselves for a successful day. So it sounds like you're big on that, but I mean, could you give some examples of, you know, how you first started to, you know, strengthen your mindset, and now how you protect your mindset, you know, even when things are maybe not going as well as you'd like?
Yeah, it's about what you can, in my opinion, it's about what you consume. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's a lot, you know, like 24-hour news has been the thing for the last 4 years, right?
Oh God, yeah.
And so that kind of that first year where the news cycle really started getting going, I found myself consuming that stuff and feeling emotions around that stuff. And so that was one of the things that was an aha moment for me, is you got to stop consuming negativity. You just got to turn it off. It's not, some things are bigger than us and I'm not going to solve those problems. And me worrying and wringing my hands about it, it's not going to make the world a better place from my standpoint. And
that's
so
right.
So I started, I first of all had to cut out the diet of negativity. That was the first piece. And then start feeding it with good things, reading, like reading and educating and listening to inspiring podcasts like this one. Those are the kinds of things that start to feed the right mindset. So those were the two pieces. You gotta go on a negativity diet. You got to start eating more healthy things and mentally.
It's so true, man. I mean, I was the same. I used to get up and turn the news on every morning and watch it at night before bed. And in my mind, I'm like, well, I'm being educated, right? I'm being a responsible citizen by staying tuned in with what's going on in the world. And then it finally dawned on me. I'm like, no, I'm just like having negativity for breakfast and dinner and a midnight snack before I go to bed. And then how could you stay positive when it's just a constant? So I cut out the news. You know, and I still want to be informed. I have my ways of, you know.
There's headlines you can read, right?
Sure, yeah, right. Get the cliff notes or whatever from reliable sources. But, that was huge for me, right? Just cutting out the negativity. And then, it's a lot about the input. I don't know if you're familiar with stoicism at all. But for me, I read a little bit of stoicism. And I don't claim to be like a stoic philosopher myself. But it really resonated with me when it kind of clicked. And I said, all right. Focus on what I can control, right? And then kind of just block out the things that are outside of my control, which to your point, you know, whatever's happening in the world, like I can't control a global pandemic. I can do my part, but I'm not going to just fixate on it. And the biggest thing that we can control is our response and how we respond to the things that happen around us. And once that kind of clicked with me, it was an absolute game changer. So anyways, I could talk about this type of stuff all day long. I'm a nerd for it, but,
I love it.
I think that's really solid advice for, you know, any aspiring entrepreneur out there that's, you know, struggling with getting their mindset right. Cause I think that's the key, right? And then, you know, from there you're in a better spot to, you know, weather the storms of entrepreneurship and figure out, you know, how to make your moves.
And if you're in that place, that's where inspiration comes from, right? If you're not receptive to that voice inside because of all the noise going on, then you're not going to have those inspirational moments. And you're not going to inspire your people, right? And so if you can declutter and get to that place where you're in a positive whatever, then things can come up from inside that are real.
So I'm curious on kind of on that note and talking about inspiration. And again, I love the why that you have for Scent Hound. Would you say that your franchisees or at least most of them or all of them are passionate about the dog grooming business? And is that necessary to be successful as a franchisee in your business?
Yeah, I think everyone that's in our system and people that look at us love their dog or love dogs. Okay. So I think that's a part of it because they feel good about. But I think even on top of that, they understand the value of the dog in our lives. They understand the role in this co-evolution dogs have had with us. And so I think that gets them excited. And then the other parts that are thereafter, those are foundation. The other parts are the industry. You know, what does the opportunity look like? Right. The model, is the model good? And so the way I've always coached our franchisees is market model team. Is the market a good one? Is there a lot of opportunity there? We have a blue ocean. The model, is it scalable? Is it simple? Is it profitable? And then the last one is, do I have a team that's got my back when things go wrong? And so market model team is the way, the lens we look at this opportunity through.
Yeah, because a lot of the coaching that I do with people I work with, because a lot of the people that come to me, they're like, Wes, I know I want to be in business for myself. I don't have a clue what business I want to get into. And a lot of people start by thinking of, you know, the widget, whatever the product or the service is. And a lot of the coaching I do is, hey, open your mind to the type of business you'd be willing to get into, because especially in most franchises, if scalability is the goal of the model, it's not going to be your role as the owner, or at least long-term, it's not going to be your role to be the one actually providing the service on a day-to-day basis. Yeah. It's your role to be the CEO of your business, to build a team and manage the team and, you know, focus on the big picture, the whole working on the business, not in the business. But like, I think about the first franchise we bought, Shelf Genie, we do custom shelving, right? I didn't know anything about shelving before I got into it. I sure as hell wasn't passionate about shelving. Yeah, I'm more passionate about it now because it's, you know, part of our livelihood. But, you know, they had, but they had a why, right? Their why is, their mission is to help turn frustration and pain into enjoyment and love, right? So like, that's something that we could connect with, even though shelving I didn't know anything about it. Still don't know a ton about it. That's kind of my wife still. She's an expert. But anyway, so I was just kind of curious what your thoughts were, you know, whether or not someone had to be passionate about the widget that you guys provide in order to be successful, because your why is a lot more than just grooming dogs.
Absolutely. I think it's funny. When I talk to people out there, we're just fortunate to be in a place where it's an emotional purchase.
Yeah.
Because I would say predominantly, I've very rarely come across someone who says, I hate dogs. What I've really come across is I might be allergic to dogs. And so that's kind of one deal. But almost everybody, you know, so we're just lucky that we have a much wider audience in that sense.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Very cool, man. Well, look, I love what you've done, what you're doing with Scent Hound. Really appreciate it. Before I let you go, I've got a lightning round if you are cool hanging with me for a couple minutes. Yeah. These are four questions that I ask every guest that comes on the podcast. And it's kind of selfish because I just love, you know, hearing all these successful entrepreneurs answer the same four questions. So first lightning round question is simply, what is the best piece of advice you've ever received? And that could be in business or just general life advice.
Yeah. And I hate to repeat myself, but the bet on yourself was definitely that one. That one like was transformational for me.
Yeah. I mean, and so I love the lightning round so much because again, I get all these very successful people on here and I get to kind of establish these commonalities or these themes to responses for these questions. And without question, that is the number one, you know, in some form or fashion, invest in yourself, bet on yourself, believe in yourself. That's the number one response from successful entrepreneurs. So love it and totally agree. Great advice. You alluded to this earlier, so I'm really curious, you know, to hear some details, if you don't mind sharing. Do you have a morning routine, you know, something that you try to do every morning to prime yourself for a successful day? What does that look like?
Yeah, up the same time every single morning. For me, it's 5:45, big glass of water. Put on the running shoes, running shorts, half an hour run or walk. So I try, I used to run every day. I do it now 3 days a week, but I walk the other days and it's a half an hour clarity break.
Yeah.
So I really kind of think it is walking meditation. So like for me, sitting and meditating doesn't work as well as me jogging or walking. And then I can really kind of get in that zone. I come back, a lot of things occur to me when I'm doing that and I have that half an hour. So then I sit down and I spend kind of 10 minutes writing down the stuff that occur to me.
Yep.
And then it's in with the kids and the family and then off to the races.
And do you find that the journaling or the writing, whatever you call it, kind of helps give you even more clarity, right? Because you have all these ideas that come up and if you didn't put it on paper, then it's probably just bouncing around in your head the rest of the day.
They're fleeting. They're absolutely fleeting. So you got to kind of pull them out of the ether, get them down, and then you got to revisit them. And then you can start to put them together. And every week I kind of review my notes and I put the highlights and I put my ideas folders and I put all these folders together where all that stuff's there.
Yeah.
But if I don't capture it in that moment, it really evaporates.
So. Yeah. Same for me, or I just keep fixating on it and I'm distracted, you know, from other things I should be focusing on the rest of the day. So once I get it on paper, it's like, it's there and it's out of my head, until I'm ready to revisit it. So I love that. Quick tip on the water. If you want a game changer, sea salt and lemon juice, mix it in.
Love it.
When I started doing that, it was a game changer for me. You mentioned that you love reading. What book are you reading right now?
So I'm reading two books right now. One is called Range, which I'm finding fascinating. And it's really about, we had this ethos of specialization and the science says that's actually not right. You got to have a wide variety of experiences. So Range is a new book out. It's a really cool one. And then I'm reading a book and I don't remember the title of it on NLP, which is neuro-linguistic processing. I'm kind of just starting to get my head into that world, but there's pretty cool stuff there.
Very cool. Yeah. Love it, man. I'll have to check out Range for sure. All right. Final question is simply, what is your definition of freedom and are you living it?
Yeah. So I think freedom is really kind of defined two ways in my mind. Freedom, number one, is really around choice. Mm-hmm. So having the freedom having greater amounts of choices creates greater amounts of freedom.
Yeah.
And then awareness. I think awareness is freedom because, and I don't mean to go off the rails here, but freedom from the tyranny of your ego. Like you have to be aware of the tyranny of your ego. And so just having an awareness of what your ego wants and where it's at, and then just making sure that it's within control. because otherwise your ego can run stuff and take over where you don't want it to take over. So
no doubt. Would say
choice and awareness are the two things I would use to define freedom.
And that ties right back into stoicism too, right?
Yeah.
Getting rid of the ego. Awesome. So would you say that you're living it now?
I mean, so we are in the perfect place. Life is really amazing right now. So I'm super grateful for kind of, you know, it's been a hard year for a lot of people and I want to recognize that, but we've really been fortunate.
Yeah.
And I have a tremendous amount of gratitude for kind of the opportunities that we have, for the people that we're surrounded with. Life is just great. I couldn't be happier.
Yeah. That's awesome to hear, man. Really like what you're doing. Really appreciate you taking time to join me here on the podcast and sharing your story. I'm glad that we connected. Definitely enjoyed getting to know you a little bit better. Where can people connect with you and where can people learn more about Scent Hound and what you guys are doing over there?
Yeah. So scenthoundfranchising.com is our website. You can check us out there. People can connect with me directly, tim@scenthound.com. Straight awesome. Up, just shoot me a message.
Yeah, we'll put that in the show notes so people can find it easily. But Tim, again, man, you're an inspiration. Really appreciate you dropping in on the podcast.
All right, great. Have a great day.
That's a wrap. Thanks for joining me today. And be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you'll know when a new episode is released. You can also check me out on my website at www.path2frdm.com. And if you want more information about franchising or just want to say hello, feel free to contact me at wes@path2frdm.com. Thanks again. Now go drop in.